From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. This is remarkable. 10 years ago, on one of the first shows we ever broadcast, our crazy but true news story, the one you had to tell apart from the fake ones, was about a ridiculous fringe political candidate. We dared our audience to believe the story of a former feather boa-wearing professional wrestler who was running to be governor of Minnesota. Ha ha. Well, shortly thereafter, Jesse Ventura got himself elected, which embarrassed us a bit, but he made up for it by providing us with lots of material during his 4 years in office. Later in this hour, he will be our guest to play Not My Job. It's a sweet kind of reunion. It makes us hope that 10 years from now, we'll be trading jokes on the air with Senator Larry Craig. But first, it's your turn to start a long-term relationship with us. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant this week. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Tracy Alexander calling from Roanoke, Virginia.
And how are things in Roanoke?
They're actually pretty lovely. It's springtime. And
oh,
so,
that's great.
Yeah,
springtime
it's very nice. South.
What do you do there?
Well, during the day, I'm a mild-mannered financial aid counselor at
and
Holland
at night,
University.
You fight crime.
Well, I like to imagine that I do. It's one of those few things I do in my free time.
Tracy, welcome to our show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to humorist and author, most recently of Long Time Leaving Dispatches from Up South, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Hello.
Hello, Tracy.
Hi.
Next, the woman behind the syndicated advice column, Ask Amy, is Amy Dickinson.
Hey, Tracy.
And lastly, say hello to a humorist and the author, most recently of P.J. O'Rourke on the Wealth of Nations, Mr. P.J. O'Rourke.
Hello. Coach, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, thank you.
Tracy, welcome to the show. Now, we're going to start this week's show with a new game. This week, it seemed to us as if there were a lot of people out there trying to reach out and touch someone. So right now, Carl is going to recreate for you some voicemail messages we think might have been left by people in the news. It's a change of pace for Carl, as usually, of course, he does the greeting. Identify the newsmaker or a news story 2 times out of 3, you will win our prize. Ready to play?
I certainly hope so.
Okay. Your first message was one we imagined might have been left on Hillary Clinton's answering machine on Wednesday.
Hey, Hill, just wanted to call and congratulate you on beating Obama so soundly in West Virginia. I mean, that's huge. Oh, and one other thing. I'm endorsing Obama. Sorry if I led you on. Give my best to Bill. See ya.
So who might that have been that was glad that Hillary didn't pick up?
That was John Edwards.
Yes, indeed. As a successful trial lawyer, if there's one thing John Edwards knows, it's how to make sure he is on the winning side. So after months of playing hard to get, he finally endorsed Obama right after Obama's victory in the Democratic race seemed certain, but not so late that he won't be able to ask for a favor later on. Maybe Edwards wants to try to be vice president again on the grounds that he can appeal to those resistant white Southerners. The campaign slogan can be, if you combine them, they're both just tan. I mean, does it make a difference? I mean, here you have a failed presidential candidate endorsing a successful presidential candidate. Is this big news? Is this going to make any difference, you guys think?
What would that constitute, making a difference? I mean, the only way that you can make a difference in this long Democratic thing is to suggest that there might be an end to it.
Right.
Is there a fat lady who could sing?
All right, here's your next message. It's one we think that might have been left on the voicemail of a Detroit TV reporter.
Hey there. Look, I just want to say I'm sorry I called you sweetie. It was sexist and condescending and does not represent my profound respect for you and all women. Thanks for understanding, babe. You're a doll.
So who really had to apologize to a TV reporter after calling her a sweetie?
Barack Obama?
Barack Obama, yes.
No.
The nearly victorious Democratic candidate was caught on camera dismissing a female reporter's question by saying, quote, hold on a second, sweetie.
Oof.
This led to widespread criticism that he would never say such a thing to Tim Russert. Although you don't know. After the camera goes off. Anyway.
He can't say bitter. He can't say sweetie. What can he say?
Yeah.
Now, the weird thing is that Obama really did leave a voicemail message for the reporter. In the real one, he apologized for both blowing her off and for calling her sweetie. He says, quote, that's a bad habit of mine. I do it sometimes with all kinds of people, unquote. This is true. He almost caused a riot back in Ohio by using it to address a room full of Teamsters. And, of course, there was the outcry when the tape emerged of the senator dismissing the concerns of rural working class women, calling them, quote, bitter sweeties.
Oh, I see. I see.
You know, if he was a Southern woman, he would have gotten away with it.
That's true.
But he's not.
I'm sorry, you just made my head explode. Right. If Barack Obama was a Southern
woman.
You know, we need to start the whole thing over again.
I'm sorry.
We could take that.
He'd be a Barack Obama mama.
No. He would be. You're doing great. Your last message was one that, in our imagination, was left by a parent for his young children.
Hey, honey, I just wanted to let you know that we've got some exciting new plans for this summer's vacation. We're going to go camping in the backyard. And we can go swimming down at the quarry. And instead of that amusement park, what do you say we ride downhill really fast in a shopping cart?
We imagine a lot of parents will be telling their kids that the summer vacation won't be as cool as they had hoped because of what?
Stupid gas prices.
Those stupid gas prices,
no.
Exactly right. The AAA this week announced that fewer Americans will be driving more than 50 miles or taking flights for the long Memorial Day weekend. It's the first real sign that Americans have hit a tipping point with gas prices. So instead of theme parks and beaches, many Americans will be trying to convince the kids that Walmart is a thrill ride with low, low prices. If you want to lower your consumption of gasoline, experts recommend combining errands, making sure your tires are fully inflated. And for owners of the largest SUVs, Hummers, etc., you just need to get rid of them and reconcile yourself to your inadequacies.
That could take all summer.
You Prius-driving pinko bums.
We're confident. We don't need.
I got two Chevy Suburbans, and if gas hits $5, I'm going for three and a close personal relationship with a Saudi royal family.
Carl, how did our guests do in our quiz?
Well, Tracy had three correct answers, Peter. So, Tracy, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Wonderful.
Well done.
All right, Tracy. Good work.
Right now, panel, it's time for you, of course, to answer some questions about the week's news. Roy, we have all had our complaints about air travel, but none of us, it seems, has as much to complain about as one Gökhan Multhu. Mr. Multhu is suing JetBlue Airlines for $2 million. He says the airline made him do what during a cross-country flight?
I heard this story, and I thought, that's bad. I could tell 12 stories worse than this. But they made him take most of the flight on the toilet.
That's right. They made him sit in the toilet for 3 hours.
But he wasn't sitting next to a fat man or anything.
There you go. Multhu says that the flight crew forced him to sit in the lavatory for 3 hours en route to New York from San Diego back in February. He says in his lawsuit that the experience made him, quote, embarrassed, humiliated, mortified, disgraced, degraded, and still shocked beyond belief, unquote. There's some dispute about what actually happened. He was on a free pass that didn't actually guarantee him a seat. It's possible it was all a misunderstanding. But in the meantime, other passengers are saying, okay, he had privacy, a little leg room, nobody elbowing him in the ribs. And he didn't have to wait for the bathroom. Sign me up, they're saying.
No kidding. I mean, I always get that seat between the 300-pound Jehovah's Witness, you know, and the woman with the hysterical baby.
Yeah.
that's my seat.
Roy, what experience have you had that are worse than this guy's?
I don't want to be sizist or anything, but I have. When a person's middle part of his or her body overflows the seat, the armrest. When the armrest is covered with stomach. it creeps me out.
You know what would be worse? If you spent 3 hours in the bathroom because you like really had to be in there for 3 hours. They wouldn't let you then.
You can't ride in there. What kind of person are you? There's already a man in there. He paid for his ticket.
Goaltan.
Senator Larry Craig. Senator Larry Craig, go back to your seat.
Lazy days, your days. August time, not my time. Lazy days, your days. August time, not my time. Hate this weary, dreary holiday time. Hate this weary, dreary holiday time.
It's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Brett Hagen from Ames, Iowa.
Hey, how are things in Ames?
Absolutely gorgeous today.
No, Ames is where not the University of Iowa, but Iowa State is, right?
Correct.
Iowa State. Do you have a connection with that fine institution?
I just graduated last week.
Oh, my gosh.
Excellent.
Well, congratulations. Well done. And I know this is a sensitive question, but I'll do it anyway. So what are you going to do with your life, young man?
Well, I graduated with a double major in journalism and religious studies, and I plan to go work in computers.
Does that make sense?
But this is perfect.
Well, I'm serious. It really does make sense.
I took a look at which pays better, and...
None of the above.
Mm-hmm. But this is great because
journalism or religion.
With a degree in journalism, he won't necessarily know fact from fiction, so he's the perfect contestant for this
game, don't you think? That's true.
We got a sucker here, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, welcome to the show, Brett. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Brett's topic?
For the last time, lady, yes, I'm over 21. Now hand over the Schlitz.
Peter, stop squeezing Carl.
I know. So for the first part of our lives, we're never old enough. And then for all the rest of our lives, we're doing everything we can to seem younger. This week, we read about a story that showed us it's only getting harder and harder to conceal your real age. Our panelists are going to tell you 3 stories that show us how it's going to take more than a fake ID or a nip and tuck. Choose the real story of age verification. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Sure thing.
First up, let's hear from Amy Dickinson.
In Japan, the legal age to smoke is 20, but officials there got worried because kids were buying cigarettes from vending machines. So they are planning to install special face recognition cameras in their 500,000 cigarette machines to catch the country's littlest lying nicotine addicts. Now, vending machines will scan faces looking for sags, bags, wrinkles, and crow's feet as a way to ensure that the buyer is old enough to fully commit to a future of hacking pre-emphysema. Forehead furrows, deep laugh lines, smoker's pull, lucky strikes for you! No word yet on what to do about 12-year-olds holding grandma up to the camera to score some smokes.
A cigarette vending machine in Japan that checks for wrinkles. Your next story of not getting away with lying about your age comes from PJ O'Rourke.
You know, I've been thinking about John McCain, 71-year-old guy, crippled by a fighter plane ejection, tortured by communists, bouts with cancer, and at his age, married to a babe like Cindy. Guy should have been dead years ago, you know? Well, it turns out there's a blog posting on Ann Coulter's website claiming that John is lying about his age. She says that she has carbon dated McCain's saliva from a discarded Marlboro And he is actually 56 years old, and he's just been partying really hard. You know? Yes, he was in the Navy, but as an enlisted man, he accidentally triggered the carrier's aircraft catapult and blew six Defense Department dignitaries into the South China Sea. Dishonorable discharge. Yes, he was in prison, but it was for bouncing checks. And yes, both his arms were broken, but that was done by a bouncer at Studio 54.
Ann Coulter suggests that John McCain is faking his age and has proof. Your last story of people being forced to admit their real age comes from Roy Blunt, Jr.
Ann Arbor, Michigan may be a college town, but Farley's of that same locality is a real bar. Your ID may say you're drinking age, but if your appearance is at all to the contrary, you cannot be served in Farley's unless you take what is known as the exam. Questions on the exam are like, history, who won season two of American Idol? Sports, Team LC or Team Heidi on the hills? Language arts, what does the text message R-O-F-L-M-A-O mean? We hire a kid to write the questions, says Patrick Farley, whose great-great-grandfather founded Farley's 100 years ago this week. If you answer any of them right, we throw you out.
So, one of these stories is about an age test. I'm sorry, excuse me. One of these stories about an age test in the news is in fact true. Is it, from A.B. Dickinson, a new kind of cigarette vending machine that uses a camera to check for wrinkles to make sure you're old enough to smoke? From P.J. O'Rourke, a theory that John McCain is younger than he really is based on carbon dating of his cigarette butts? Or from Roy Blunt, Jr., a test in a bar? If you know too much, then you can't come in. Which of these is a real story?
Well, I can rule out the one about Ann Coulter. I can see her doing that, but I think I'm going to go with Amy's story.
You're going with Amy's story about the cigarette vending machine.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, to bring you the real story, we spoke to someone who had a strong opinion about this particular kind of testing.
That Japanese vending machine couldn't identify me because of my boyish good looks, but I think our big worry is kids could fool it by just putting on a Ronald Reagan mask.
Cool, but clever. That was Dave Dobbins, the chief operating officer at American Legacy. That's a tobacco prevention organization. He was explaining how old or young people could easily fool a cigarette vending machine. You are correct, Brett. You picked the right answer.
Thank you.
Made a point for Amy. Just for being honest, you've earned our prize, Carl Kaplan's voice on your home answering machine.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for playing our game.
Thank you.
And now the game in which we invite notable people onto our show to answer questions about things they know nothing about. It's called Not My Job. It is a particular pleasure for us to welcome today's guest, for he's been on the show in spirit many times before. We talked about his candidacy for governor of Minnesota. We talked about his surprising victory, his fascinating 4 years in office, the many interesting things he did, the even more interesting things he said. Basically, the guy kept us going between the end of the Monica Lewinsky scandal and the day George Bush choked on a pretzel. So as such, I feel like I am welcoming him home and away, Governor Jesse Ventura of Minnesota. Welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
It's my pleasure to be here. I couldn't think of anything I'd rather be doing.
I understand. It's so great to have you. Let's go back in time. You, of course, did the impossible in 1998. As a third-party candidate, you defeated the Republican. You defeated the Democrat. You became the governor of Minnesota. It was extraordinary. But then you served just one term, and you walked away. You didn't run for re-election. Why not?
Well, because, first of all, on the honest side of it was my wife's health that was suffering, and I felt that that was more important than holding office to me is her. Second is because I like to think of myself as a statesman, not a politician.
Yeah.
And statesmen come and serve and then imagine they go back to what they used to do.
Yeah. The Cincinnatus returning to his plow, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or go on to a new job or whatever. Find out what it's truly like in the private sector. You know, most of these elected guys tell you how they feel your pain in the private sector, but the problem is they've never been in it.
Right. Well, let me, that's true. Let me ask you, I remember famously that when you won the election that night in 1998, you said, "We shocked the world." Did you shock yourself? Were you surprised that you won?
Well, somewhat, but I always felt I could win. I didn't go into it just to make a point and lose. I just felt if everything lined up correctly and we got a little bit lucky and here and there, that we could pull it off, and we did. And the detriment, the thing that caused their downfall, was they allowed me to debate them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, I felt like I was going to a gunfight with both hands loaded against two guys that were unarmed.
Right. Because you had been a professional wrestler. There's one thing you knew how to handle was a cage match.
Well, not only that, but you got to sell that cage match.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be able to go up, like when I taught at Harvard, one of my classes was how pro wrestling prepares you for politics.
So
people laugh about it, but it's really true, because first of all, no matter how you prepare for your match in pro wrestling,
yeah,
something will go wrong. And so you got to be able to think on your feet quickly, and that the same thing holds true in politics. Second of all, pro wrestling makes you very comfortable in front of a microphone because you have to sell yourself to the crowd. I was a villain, and my job was to get them so angry at me that they'd pay their hard-earned dollars to see me get my ass kicked.
I wanted to ask you, though, as you said, professional wrestling, it's all about a facade, it's about a persona. Was the guy presented to the voters of Minnesota in 1998, was that the real Jesse Ventura, or were you putting on a show for them?
It was part me and part a show.
Okay. It's nice that you admit that. What part did you make up? What was the show part?
Well, the show part was my inauguration when I put on the feathered boas, the earrings, and the sunglasses, and the Jimi Hendrix t-shirt.
If I remember correctly, didn't you climb down a rope in the Target Center in Minneapolis?
Well, I did that during a Timberwolf game. I fast roped, like in my Navy SEAL days.
Right.
I always feel that in order to love life, you need to defy death now and then.
I guess so. That's why we invited you on the show, so I could have the same.
No, that's why you kept me over the phone.
There you go. Well done, sir. Now, before we play our game, I got one question I want to ask you.
Sure.
You were probably the most successful of the politicians who advanced to office on the theory, you know, we need, as you said earlier, we need a regular guy in office. We need somebody from the real world, enough of these politicians. And then you were in office for 4 years. Do you still believe that, or did you come to believe that actually politics is a profession and maybe an expertise in politics and experience in government is actually useful?
No, I don't think that you need particular expertise, because look at the current situation. Okay.
All right, you win.
Besides him.
Yeah, okay.
Look at who's running for president right now.
Yeah.
These are three senators. Now, supposedly, they're great senators who have the expertise and know what they're doing out there, right?
Yeah.
Well, how is it then that they can leave for 2 years and campaign for president?
They
haven't done a thing in the Senate for 2 years. They've been out campaigning for president, both McCain, Obama, and Clinton.
Right.
So how, and like when I ran for governor of Minnesota, I was the only one that lost his job in the private sector.
Oh, yeah.
While I ran against the mayor and the attorney general. So while they're out running against me, my tax dollars are paying them their salaries for jobs they're not doing.
So,
and yet they will tell you they're the only person qualified to do the job. How ridiculous is that?
I see your point. Gosh. Ready to go?
Ready.
All right. Jesse Ventura, we're so excited to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
It's a dog leg left, then you go through the windmill and right down the alligator's windpipe.
The United States Open will be played this weekend on a course in Booth Bay, Maine. We're not talking about the PGA event, but the one sanctioned by the U.S. Pro Mini Golf Tour. In honor of the tournament, we're going to ask you three questions about the sport variously called miniature golf, putt-putt, or crazy golf. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine.
Okay.
Carl, who is former Governor Jesse Ventura playing for?
Peter, he is playing for Shelley Markov in Baku, Azerbaijan, who listens via our podcast.
All right. So your answers will wing around the world to Azerbaijan. First question is about the origin of the game, miniature golf. Most authorities believe that the first mini golf course was created in 1867 in where else? St. Andrews, Scotland. Also the legendary birthplace of what mini golf players call big golf. Why did the Scottish golfers feel the need for a miniature version of their game? Was it A, they wanted a version of the game to play indoors when the wind was too strong to decently wear the kilts required by the real course's dress code? Was it B, they wanted a golf game for ladies to play without having to raise their arms above their shoulders, which was seen as violent, shocking, and indecent? Or C, was it that one Scottish noble made a friend a bet that he could play an entire round in a score of 30? He just didn't stipulate which course.
I would say it's B.
You know, for B, that they didn't think ladies should play real golf, so they wanted to give them a more dainty version.
Yeah.
You're right, sir. Very good. What happened was, it was felt in St. Andrews that women should not play golf because raising their arms above their shoulders was unladylike.
Yep.
So the members of the Royal and Ancient Club of St. Andrews...
You know, it's a shame we can't get that rule passed today.
You think
it?
So?
Where's the chair? No.
You can take the man out of the World Wrestling Federation, but you can't take the World Wrestling Federation out of the man. All right, second question. Second question. Mini golf has been extremely popular over the years, especially during the 1920s, but since then it's only had a few moments in the sun pop culture-wise, including which of these? A contestant, was it A, a contestant in the British version of Survivor, used his wiles and skills as a mini golf champion to win the game show, sparking a revival of the sport in Britain? Was it B, in 1994, then Playboy model Jenny McCarthy did a very popular photo spread set on a mini golf course? Or C, in the 1990s, the biggest hit on the Quebecois cable sports network was a weekly French language mini golf competition with its cast of competitors becoming minor celebrities?
C.
C, you're going to go for the Quebecois golf show?
Yeah.
It is. My gosh, you're good. We thought we were so clever. We're like, what does Jesse Ventura know about mini golf?
Well, he obviously...
Now, I've won for the contestant, right?
You have, you have.
There you go.
Well, let me tell you about the show. It was called Défi Mini Putt, and viewers could enjoy half an hour a week of competitive mini golf, played on some courses around Montreal. The holes all had names in French, of course, like Le Slalom, La Disco, and most terrifyingly, Le Monstre. I want to see Jesse Ventura, and I bet if you do too, if you can be perfect. Here we go. Last question. Time to learn some mini golf lingo. Which of these is a term you might hear in hardcore miniature golf circles? A, Swedish felt. B, hell screw. C, bump and dump.
I'll go with C, bump and dump.
You're going to go with bump and dump. No, it was Swedish felt. Swedish
really?
Felt. The Swedes, for some reason, are really big into miniature golf. They are credited with the invention of one of the most popular surfaces for mini golf courses.
Well, Swedish, you know why I didn't know that? I've never played it in Sweden.
There you go. If only you had, sir. Carl, how did Jesse Ventura do in our quiz?
Well enough, Peter. He had two correct answers, so he wins for Shelly Markov in Baku, Azerbaijan.
Well done. Yet another member of your fan base. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. This was one of the most difficult things I've been trying and pressurized things I've ever done.
Well, and yet you succeeded again. It's amazing.
Well, you know, they said I couldn't be governor either.
There you go. Jesse Ventura has been at various times a Navy SEAL, a professional wrestler, a movie star, and the governor of the great state of Minnesota. His book, Don't Start the Revolution Without Me, is out and available everywhere. Jesse Ventura, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Amy, as you know, President Bush has sometimes been accused of not sharing in the sacrifice that he has imposed on America's armed forces. Well, that is just not true. This week, he revealed that he, too, has suffered. He said that to show solidarity with the troops, he stopped doing what after the U.S. invaded Iraq?
Hmm. Wow. He stopped. What was he doing before?
Well, he was doing...
remember? Well, he used to work out a lot. Does he still do that?
He does that.
He's still working out. Okay. But he's not really working out. You know what I mean?
No.
What did he stop doing out of solidarity to the truth.
And was it or was it not a sacrifice for Laura?
Yeah.
Right. Oh.
No.
Oh, that.
Don't let that devil whisper in your ear, Amy. It has nothing to do with that.
Okay. He stopped.
You didn't hear about this?
No.
Well, it kind of makes sense because he was already in Iraq, so spending more time and trapped in the sand would have been redundant.
Golfing.
He gave up golf.
Oh, my God.
The president was being interviewed by Politico.com, and the reporter, perhaps acting on a tip, asked him why he never played golf anymore. The president said that he gave it up after being pulled off a course in 2003 because of a bombing in Iraq. He said, quote, "I feel I owe it to the families to be in solidarity as best as I can with them, and I think playing golf during a war just sends the wrong signal." Mm. So since that time, out of respect for the troops, he's been careful to only be seen fishing, biking, clearing brush at his ranch, going for speedboat rides with his dad, and giving shoulder massages to German Chancellor Angela Merkel. By the way, on at least two occasions after the date on which he says he decided to give up golf, he went and played golf.
Well.
PJ, the Washington Post reported that ever since the FBI and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives...
My favorite.
...were both...
Took all my
all
hobbies.
All of them, or...
All my hobbies.
Anyway, since those two bureaus merged, they've been fighting huge battles. It's so bad that at one crime scene, members of the two agencies threatened to do what to each other?
No.
Oh, I didn't see this. To blow smoke in each other's face.
No.
And to mace each other?
Arrest each other.
Yeah.
The FBI...
I arrest you.
You were there? That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
The FBI and the ATF merged 5 years ago.
Along with a bunch of other agencies,
yes.
And they all hate each other.
Yeah, ever since then, the two sides have been showing the Sunnis and Shiites how to really
yes.
hold a grudge. FBI and ATF officials refuse to work together in cases. They have sold each other counterfeit cigarettes. And in one occasion, at least, they threatened to arrest each other at the scene of a crime. The FBI officials were mimicking everything ATF officials said in, like, a sing-song voice. Everything that we're doing, they're doing.
Yes, you did.
The Department of Justice has said that unless the officers learn to get along and share, Attorney General Michael Mukasey will take away their alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. PJ, police in Australia pulled over a man who was driving an unregistered car. They were shocked to find a 5-year-old in the back just crawling around happily without a seatbelt. The driver's excuse was that he needed the seatbelt to secure what?
Had to be beer.
It was.
Had to be beer.
Clearly, you've been to Australia.
I've been to Australia. I didn't see the news item, but I've been to Australia.
And what surely must have seemed like the worst Bud Light commercial ever. Police found a 30-can case of beer strapped into the seat while a 5-year-old just bounced around back there. Now, certainly most 5-year-olds would think this was great fun. Police, though, were not amused. One officer said, quote, "This is the first time that beer has taken priority over a child."
So, in his
limited experience, I guess. But to be fair, it was an imported microbrew. So.
Buckle up for safety, buckle up. Buckle up for safety, always buckle up. Pull your seatbelt snug, give an extra tug. Buckle up for safety, buckle up.
Buckle up for safety, buckle up. Buckle up for safety, always buckle up. Show the world you care.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924, or send an email to waitwait@npr.org. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is John Allori in Portland, Maine.
All right, what do you do there in Maine, in Portland?
I'm a web designer and formerly an internet journalist.
An internet journalist?
Yes.
You wrote about the internet?
No, I managed a local news website.
I see. So you're one of the people who are killing journalism.
After 4 years in a TV newsroom, yeah, I would gladly say.
Yes, you were stabbing it over and over and over again.
Yeah. That's something to put on my resume.
There you go. Well, John, welcome to the show. Carl Castle will read you 3 news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on the 2 of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
Here's your first limerick.
Veggies don't grow real big in a vase.
So let's try some vast low-pressure place. When our plants all blast off, earthly roots get cast off. We've grown huge, giant food out in
space.
Yes. Very good. So, you have a food shortage, eh? Well, how about some giant monster vegetables from space? Scientists in China sent vegetable seeds up in a satellite to orbit the Earth for 2 weeks. They brought them back and planted them. The result, 21-pound tomatoes, 2-foot-long cucumbers, chili plants that look like small trees, and best of all, a giant 196-pound pumpkin. Agricultural scientists from around the world have marveled at the plants. They asked how this could be possible, and the pumpkin said, I guess I just have big bones. And everybody slowly backed away. Here is your next limerick.
We smelt look good svelte. Why deny it? Getting big tempts the hunters. Why try it? It helps us to swim when we're fit, slim, and trim. So we fish put ourselves on a...
diet.
Yes, diet. Diet, very good. So you said to yourself, hey, is my goldfish sucking in his gut? Yes, he might be. Diet madness not limited to we land animals. According to an Australian study published in the journal Current Biology, coral reef goby fish are extremely body conscious. They go on diets to keep themselves
after
looking fit.
After 30 cans of...
yes, exactly.
You know,
after the cat stares at them for a long time.
You know, what's really good for dieting, of course, is, you know, eating fish, so...
There you are.
Yeah.
It works out for them. Apparently, gobies have this sort of hierarchy that is dependent on body size. So subordinate fish constantly...
Kind of like New York City.
Very much like that. It works the other way, though, because in the fish, the bigger you are, the higher status you have. And lower status fish are constantly dieting to keep their size down so as not to threaten larger and therefore more powerful fish, you see. So they diet. They refuse food.
You'd think they wouldn't have to diet so much because they're always swimming.
What? That's true.
They get their exercise. Yeah.
Here is your last limerick.
This device seems less useful than fun. Covered up, it can't get the job done. When I hide solar panels in layers of flannel, will my bra catch some rays of the
sun?
Yes! Triumph International Japan Limited unveiled their green-colored solar-powered bra in Tokyo on Wednesday. It looks just like a regular bra, except for the large solar panels that must be strapped around the wearer's midsection. The solar panels can generate enough electricity to power the user's phone or iPod, or if they're really into high-tech lingerie, their motorized thong. Or in the case of Pamela Anderson, it could power all of Western Europe. You know, it's just...
Or what about those tassels?
Yes, it can spin them, motorize it, spin them. That's great. There are still some bugs.
That's cheating. I don't think you ought to have to spin them yourself.
Oh, Roy, you're such a purist.
I'm sorry.
He's old school. And damn it, Roy wants them to go in opposite directions.
That takes control. It takes study. It takes the kind of spiritual aspect.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, the bra isn't ready for market. They've got to work some bugs out. For example, it can't be washed, which could be a problem. And they need to figure out something to do about this. It doesn't work when covered with, say, cloth of any kind. So they're working on that. They're working on that. Carl, how did John do in our quiz?
Very, very well, Peter. 3 correct answers. John, you win our prize.
Well done.
Thank you.
Congratulations, John. Thanks for playing.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Now it's time to go on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. P.J. O'Rourke and Amy Dickinson are tied for first with 3 points each. Roy Blunt Jr. has 2.
Mm-hmm. All right, Roy, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when they begin your first question. Fill in the blank. In an address marking its 60th anniversary, President Bush reiterated the, quote, unbreakable relationship between the U.S. and blank.
Israel.
Right. NPR's Melissa Block was recording an interview on location in Chengdu, China, when the blank hit.
Earthquake.
Right, saying sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. Barack Obama wore a blank while campaigning in West Virginia.
An American flag pin.
Yes, on his lapel. Prolific pop artist Blank died this week at age 82.
Robert Rauschenberg.
Right, a Florida man is suing the local police department after he was ticketed for blanking at the beach.
Oh, wearing a thong.
Yeah, wearing a Speedo bathing suit.
Speedo.
Yeah. Gawker.com aired a video of Blank from his days as Inside Edition host screaming expletives at a producer.
Bill O'Reilly.
Right. A New York real estate agent and the lamb for murder was the 1,000th fugitive caught by the TV show Blank.
America's Most Wanted.
Right. The Virgin Mary has made yet another appearance as an apparition, this time in the blank of a Monterey, California man.
It sounds like it's no place that she ought to be. In the beard.
No, in the road burn on his knee from a motorcycle accident. Mark Lipton was not wearing his leather pants when he lost control of the motorcycle and slid 50 feet, but that turned out to be a blessing, according to him, because the Virgin Mary intervened and protected him from serious injury. He left her holy image in the road burn on his leg.
Oh.
The Diocese of Monterey has not said whether it will investigate Lipton's wound as an official apparition of the Holy Mother. But they were heard to say unofficially, dude, that's gross. Carl, how did Roy do in our quiz? I think well.
He had a great round, Peter. Woo! 7 correct answers for 14 more points.
Oh,
he got 16 points, and Roy has the lead.
We flipped the coin, and Amy has elected to go next. So, Amy, fill in the blank. California's Supreme Court affirmed blank couples have the right to get married.
Gay.
Right, same sex. During a speech in Ohio, blank suggested the war in Iraq could be won during his first term.
McCain.
Right. Senator Joe Biden said, this is bull bleep, in reply to President Bush's veiled accusation that Democrats want to appease blanks.
Iran?
No.
Appease Nazis? Appease...
All of the above.
All of the above, yeah. Terrorists, really. No. The chief astronomer at the blank said there was no conflict between believing in God and believing in the possibility of space aliens.
The National Observatory?
No, the Vatican. The Vatican.
Observatory.
A Texas man playing poker with his friends was taken to the hospital with minor injuries after he blanked.
Put out a cigar in his friend's
no,
face.
No, he decided to use his gun to scratch his back. Restaurateurs in Chicago breathed a sigh of relief as a 2-year ban on blank was repealed.
Fuck, fuck.
Rod, Tom Stoppard was among the nominees announced for this year's Blank Awards.
Tony?
Right, an Arizona couple learned the hard way that when you run into the desert trying to get away from the police, you should not blank.
Throw yourself onto a cactus.
Yes! That's what they did.
No! Oh, my God!
Good work! Good work!
Oh.
Christopher Somas and Ashley Strahan got caught passing a forged check, so they led police in a high-speed chase through the desert. They ditched their car and ran away on foot, hoping to get away. Then they were back, gingerly picking their way out of the cactus patch. I'm so stupid, said Somas, as cactus spines were being removed from his body. The pair has had a previous brush with the law as the masterminds of a porcupine kidnapping plot. Gone horribly wrong. Ooh. Carl, how did Amy do in our quiz?
5 correct answers for 10 more points. She now has 13 points, but Roy still has the lead. He has 16.
Whoa.
Oh. Roy's the man.
Well,
Roy's the man.
Never know.
All right, so how many then does PJ need to win?
7 correct answers.
Ooh. 7.
Ain't happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Confidence, confidence. Here we go.
No.
This is for the game, PJ, fill in the blank. For the third time in as many months, a blank party candidate lost a special election to a House seat, this time in Mississippi.
A Republican.
Yes, although the press was not allowed at the ceremony, photos of Blank's wedding were released to the public on Monday.
Jenna Bush.
Right. Former Republican Congressman Blank announced that he will run for president as a Libertarian.
Bob Barr.
Because of a decline in polar sea ice, the Interior Department...
Polar bears.
Yes, designating the polar bear. Species. Manny Ramirez of the Boston Red Sox made a great catch in the outfield, blanked, and then threw the ball to first for a double play.
Oh, he gave a high five to
yes,
the fan.
He did. Yeah. You know that. Very good, PJ. Two Davids, David Archuleta and David Cook, will battle for the title in the finale of this year's blank.
American Idol?
Yes. No. NBC announced that when Conan O'Brien begins hosting The Tonight Show, blank will take over as host of Late Night.
Jimmy Fallon.
Right. A woman in White Plains, New York, helped police find the man who stole her laptop by blanking.
By emailing him.
No, almost. By logging in remotely and telling the computer to take his picture.
No!
Clever, huh? Not as clever as throwing yourself under a cactus foot, almost.
Apple Store employee Kate Duplego was not concerned when her MacBook was stolen. She just waited until her stolen computer was online. She logged on to her Back to My Mac program remotely and snapped a couple of crystal clear photos of thieves Edmund Shahikian and Ian Frias. She then shared the photos with the police and her friends, one of whom said, "Hey, that's Ian." Carl, did PJ do well enough to win?
He needed 7 correct answers to win, and he had 7
My
correct
answers.
My God! So, with 17 points, PJ O'Rourke is this week's champion.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, now that gas prices are so high, what will families do for entertainment this summer? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, providing firsthand consumer reviews on local service like plumbers, painters, movers, and now doctors. Details at angieslist.com. The Pew Charitable Trust, striving to save the natural environment and protect the rich diversity of life it supports at pewtrusts.org. And the Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication on the web at annenbergfoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer, produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abeed. And this week, we say farewell to our intern, Jo Feldman. She's an aspiring radio personality herself. We are pleased that in the last few months we were able to give her a tutorial in what not to do. Good luck, Joe. So, panel, what? Joe Feldman, ladies and gentlemen. So, panel, what will families do instead of hitting the road this summer? Amy Dickinson.
Come on, kids. Pull my finger.
PJ O'Rourke.
Instead of hitting the road, they'll be hitting the kids. Violent child abuse. You know how Dad was always saying he was going to pull over and come back there? Well, he'll be right there. He won't have to pull over.
And Roy Blunt Jr.
They'll all sit on the couch together. Junior will have a job going. Dad will refuse to let anyone get up and go to the bathroom. And Mom will be saying, even more convincingly than usual, "I think I'm going insane."
Well, if families do any of those things, panel, this summer, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Amy Dickinson, PJ O'Rourke, Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks all for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.